Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network. The music
scene has got me down. Oh, shit.
Welcome to the sound of America.
Those solid rhythms. That famous makes you want to twist.
You cannot be saved.
Follow me.
Rock is a weapon.
Welcome to the Ugly Radio. Tonight's episode, Our Pathetic Age. Body Mod Industry, written by Unknown Citizen.
Rodrigo, I told you to reload those sewer rat traps, move them away from the cryo tubes. They ain't falling for them pellets no more, and I got a whole batch of optical nerves that are shot to fucking bits. Look at these things. Yet nod to ribbons. No amount of cyber printing gonna mend these nerve fibers. I don't care what you bait them with, just not the goddamn pellets. And seriously, I think they're getting into the amino baths because the size of these bite marks is fucking huge.
Sorry about that, friendo. Didn't see you come in. Welcome to Asimov's Aftermods. You just looking around or you want the hard sell?
My name is Isaac, and this here is my life's work. Asimov's Aftermods. Devilstown's premium Ripper Doc Clinic. We got everything a growing cyberpunk like you needs. Implants, mods, cyberwares. We got additional CPU, GPU, and increased RAM slots all for you. See farther, run faster, fuck harder, and be your absolute dystopian best. Full interneural interfacing from your fingertips to your little toes with on-site surgery and little to no aftercare necessary. No insurance, no problem. Only credits. No stamps, no trades, no cops. So, what's your poison, friendo? Functionality? Tactical? Cosmetic? You wanna be the belle of the ball? Well, how about these LED ocular transplants? I know, a bit basic, but these moodies give your eyes the right amount of pop. Plus, a custom depth-of-field interface that I patented gives you an 8x telescopic zoom with no distortion. Potato-quality vision need not apply. An extra 200 credits, and I'll throw in an up-to-date, user-friendly, year-ahead astrological spread. All available on an easy-to-read heads-up display. Very user-friendly. Shit, maybe you're one of those role-playing types. Got a little, kink in your step, Asimov's Aftermods is a judgment-free zone. Maybe you're one of those priests in the streets, freaks in the sheets. Well, Padre, I got enough silicon and fiber optics to turn your fantasies into honest-to-God realities. None of that VR, 90 TV shit. Nah, I'm talking the real. I'm interested in the singularity, making you the human you always wanted to be. Hey, I see you walk in with a little bit of a limp there, friendo. Gangland got you on the run? Devil's Town turning the screw? Nah, I'm guessing the Corpo's got your number. Not a problem. I got these here Asakara cheetah limbs. Guaranteed to increase top speed by a whole 6.2 miles per hour. Vertical output increase, you bet. You're clear 16 feet easy when you get a little bit of running room. Absolutely necessary when you gotta outrun the Corpo paid police brigade. You'll be a cityscape parkour king with our titanium-fused bionic augmentation. Comes in cheetah print, tiger style, midnight slate, and cherry red. Got a pair myself. Backed in the corner. Stand your ground with our sleek and concealable mantis prosthetics, field tested to fuck up anyone dumb enough to bring a gun to a knife fight. You seem like a gentleman who prefers a quiet approach. Am I reading that right? You've got that, silent anti-capitalist revolutionary aura about you. Well, fuck, that's all you had to say. Here's the secret menu. This here's the Blink, a specially designed chip that'll give you tactical advantage over every security system within 18 meters. Good for taking over security feeds and electrical grids. Comes outfitted with a fuck-it-all EMP that'll black out the whole city block, though I'd be sure to take cover when you plan on whipping that one out. Hey, you know, friend, I can't help but notice how quiet you are. That's a good quality to have in Devil's Town. You know, people tend to talk too much are the first ones to get, disconnected. I was like that myself when I first came to town. Yep. Came here about 20 years ago on a refugee caravan with nothing but schematics under my arms and a serious case of nuka pox. You ever see someone with that? Fuck. Half my chrome's just to cover up the scars. No one wants to buy implants and aftermods from a guy with 35% scar tissue. You know, problem of perception and whatnot. Anyways, caravan gets lit up by carrion raiders. Fucking cannibals. The ones leading the caravan book it, leaving me and most of everyone else to get carved up. Can't say I blame them for leaving me behind, but, there was youths, you know? Just as this particularly nasty carrion is about to snuff me out, this absolute monster of a mercenary appears and takes out the entire pack, and I mean with extreme prejudice. Got what they fucking deserved, if you ask me, but I can understand someone claiming overkill. When the merc's done, he starts to scavenge, surveys the casualties. No one's left breathing except me. Good old Asimov. You know, I had half a mind to ask him right there and there to finish it. Just to end the misery, you know? I mean, honestly, you take a look around at this world, at this glorious, awful future that we've built for ourselves. Devil's Town, Fallout, Corpos taking over everything and turning it into a goddamn capitalist wet dream. I should have begged for death. I should have begged for sweet fucking release. Who'd want to persist in a world like this? But I didn't. I pleaded. I begged. I cried out for salvation in the arms of a merc who already saved me once, and I asked him to do it again. And he did. The dumb bastard, he saved me. Brought me to Devil's Town, where I am king of all that you see before you. Avzamov's aftermods. Poor merc. He ain't around no more. He, got done in by a corporal kill squad. Stupid bastard, had beliefs of a better world, had a dream, led a rebellion and all that bullshit, died in a gutter in the rain. That's Devil's Town. You know what I just realized about you, friend, though? I'm looking at you and, I don't see a single output on you. Not one augmentation. You're perfectly clean.
You stay your fucking hands right there, you corpo rat. I told the last guy I was done with that shit years ago, and I don't have a single fucking word to say with anybody. Not corpos, not alliance, nobody. You tell them I am a businessman, and I am here to do just that. Business. Speak the fuck up.
Shit, did you piss yourself? God. God damn, you're just a kid. Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. It's times are a little weird. I just don't get many clean slates in here anymore, you know? So, look, I don't know what you want, but unless you got business here, I suggest you go. Well, what do you want, kid? What can Asimov's aftermods do for you?
I want to auto-tune my farts.
Get the fuck out.
Oh,
for the drama of the thing. Written by Kara Kittrick.
There once was a mighty isle, ruled by the clans of Sea, Blood, Smoke, and Mold. And in the fetid estates of the green and illumy countryside, there was a prince of the Mold clan. Diana was her name. When she was but a teenager, she said to the matriarch, "Mother, I would like to marry a Sea clan girl, with a wide-brimmed hat and boots that go up to her thighs, with eyes as sharp and shining as her cutlass, who hunts the leviathan and flirts with sea nymphs, and picks her teeth with sturgeon bone every night after supper." And Diana's mother, who was languishing in front of a broken window, her black dress festooned with crunchy autumn leaves, said,
"Diana, what a marvelous idea. Do it for me. Do it for the drama of the thing."
It just so happened that miles away, in the fishing town of Solemnsong, a foggy port overlooked by a shale bluff called Softclift, built on many sandy splits protruding like tendrils into the ocean, there lived a Sea Clan girl named Arima.
"Father, I want to marry a Mold Clan girl. Someone with a black veil and lacy cuffs, someone with thick black hair and beautiful moon-colored skin, who writes me poetry and brings me dead roses and would gladly lay down in her grave rather than forget me."
She didn't say it, because the Sea Clan were sensible people, and her papa would box her in the ears for a statement like that. But she thought it. They met a scant 3 months later in the city of Ereburg, with zeppelins roaring overhead and boilers hissing underneath. This was Smoke Clan territory, where men in gas masks labored for the glory of boardroom monsters. Diana was there to spook the townsfolk. Arima was there to buy flintlock pistols. They spied each other across the square, and lo, Arima's hat was broad, and her boots high, and her eyes bright, and so on and so forth. And lo, Diana was wearing a veil and lacy cuffs, dragging a moth-eaten train through the dirt. And it was honestly difficult to tell anything else about her, because of course her face was covered. But Arima found the overall impression very promising indeed.
"Oh, windswept beauty," said Diana. "Jewel of the waves."
"Fuck me sideways with a gaff hook," said Arima, who had the mouth of a sailor.
Diana brought Arima home, and they waltzed in a dimly lit ballroom while the sounds of mournful violins issued from an unclear location, and the floorboards groaned as the skeletons inside them tried to escape. Arima brought Diana home, and there was an angry sword fight, which Arima assured her new girlfriend was the way Sea Clan family functions usually went. They were married the traditional way, with demented Blood Clan surgeons transfusing their lifeblood into each other. They then spent a week in the hospital bed, deathly ill, because of the way blood works. Years later, Diana came down with the consumption, which was excellent for her career as a poet, so she could no longer accompany Arima on her voyages. Arima's job was to hunt the deific Leviathan, a great honor for any Sea Clan, but it meant she returned to land only every 7 years.
"Why don't you stitch me something while I'm away?"
she asked.
"Yes," Diana cried. "Every 7 years I shall climb the cliffs and add one stitch to the shirt, and only when it's done shall I finally die."
"Yeah, whatever, weirdo," Arima said.
"Well, I'm off."
And she climbed aboard her vessel and pointed her cutlass at the horizon.
"What ho, sailors!" she cried. "Tonight we dine on the meat of God!"
You can still see Diana if you visit Solemnsong on returning day. She'll be at the apex of Softcliff, black veil billowing as she adds another stitch to her beloved pirate shirt.
for the drama of the thing.
Citizen Pimlico 891 could see his arm extended out in front of him. Attached to it was a beautiful, olive-skinned woman. She led him along a beach promenade, her flowing raven-black hair caught in the breeze that ran off the Mediterranean Sea and momentarily uncovered the elegantly contoured nape of her neck. He closed his eyes and allowed the warm rays of sunshine to flicker across the inside of his eyelids. He opened them again, and the girl with the raven hair paused to glance at him over her shoulder, her soft pink lips pursed in a heart shape, ready to whisper a sweet message of love. They sat together in a restaurant, a small family-run eatery nestled in a tiny Byzantine square. The mosaic-tiled decor was offset against the blood-orange warmth of the evening. Couples cooed at each other from across tables set for two while the sun fell slowly behind a barren, hilly backdrop. The dwindling light contained their shared intimacy. The girl with the raven hair held out a morsel of grilled aubergine on the end of a fork, the scent of it making Citizen Pimlico 891 lean involuntarily forward to taste it. Throbbing music began to spill out a pulsating, muffled bass, growing steadily louder as it drew closer. The amber shards of sunlight faded through a deep blue. They were then mutated through purple darkness. Then, through a neon blur, they found themselves on a dance floor. The individual floor tiles lit up as they glided across them. Citizen Pimlico 891's heart pounded in time with the bass line, and serotonin tickled his nerve endings. The smell of her peach-scented perfume lingered in his nostrils, and words of affection caught at the back of his throat. Then, like a carousel slide projector transitioning, they shifted to the next scene. Shimmering light reflected from a hotel swimming pool and glimmered across their bodies as they lay side by side on a pool lounger. She held his gaze, her green eyes vivid in the light. Her fingers lightly traced circles across the back of his hand. She leaned forward to say something, stopping to smile bashfully. But her words got lost in a cacophony of fireworks that exploded above them. Golden showers of sparks rained down. Then they were back, walking hand in hand on the beach promenade at night, bathed in golden champagne luminescence. Fireworks burst around them like flowers blooming in the night sky. The raven-haired girl looked at him, ready to whisper something affectionate. Citizen Pimlico 891 waited for the words to come, the bitter disappointment growing inside him like cancer. It was a moment that he lived for repeatedly, yet it was always tainted with disillusionment. It left his throat dry and his stomach cramped. A surging sensation of infatuation poured through him like water trickling from a rusty tap. The words that left her mouth were always the same. "Welcome to Tel Aviv," she said. "The Mediterranean capital of cool." The 9D TV flickered and buzzed. White noise disrupted the images, a common issue with the lower-end models. The mirage of the raven-haired girl disappeared in a crackle of static, and an advertisement for dishwasher tablets took over. The musty smell of dirty plates invaded his nostrils. It was produced by the 9D TV's inbuilt Aromascope 360 smells that accompany every television set. The synthetic scent of lemon and orange filled the space, while a holographic image of a detergent brand mascot danced in front of his face, as if laughing at his feeling of hopelessness. He understood how people could starve to death, unable to pry themselves away from the combination of holographic images, engineered chemical scents, and air blasts that hit the hand in a precise sequence transmitting feelings, both negative and positive, love, hate, pathos, and joy. The 9D TV was just like the radio and newspaper advertisements promised. Every viewing a multi-sensory and emotional event, a curious journey down the bottomless rabbit hole. It wasn't so much that people took a trip down the rabbit hole, more like they fell in head first and never hit the bottom. They sat on their sofas or lay in bed, watching one event after another, falling in and out of love with Hollywood starlets or losing themselves in epic war sagas. Some viewers got hooked on the adrenaline rush of fleeing for their lives with ravenous beasts in tow. Some became addicted to making their own choices along a branching, multi-layered adventure with knights and dragons. At the same time, some voyaged on an endless odyssey of adults-only skin flick experiences. With people willingly severed from reality, the world outside no longer made any sense, nor even mattered. Outside the TV catch zone, the area was nothing more than a dried and withered shell of dust storms, months of endless rain, and lockdowns. Television manufacturers programmed their sets to show only landscapes after 48 hours of continuous viewing. After 72 hours, the set would turn off completely for 24 hours to prevent catatonic television syndrome. Hackers had learned to get around the restrictions by using clandestinely imported microchips, which meant viewers, like Pimlico 891, could take protracted viewing sessions that lasted for weeks or even months. An amplified voice could be heard outside his apartment on the concourse, the sound of a police PA system issuing commands. His television suddenly flickered onto a screensaver, a peaceful forest, accompanied by the familiar scent of pine sprayed from Aromascope 360. The holographic words, "Containment Protocol," flashed on the screen. Pimlico 891 shifted himself outside of the TV's catch range. It was always a stupefying sensation, as it was for any viewer who used the chip to sit for extended periods of time in front of its sensors. It took him a few seconds to locate himself. His two-bedroom flat's familiar odor and dark green gloaming brought him back to reality. He sat hunched over, his head in his hands, his eyes burning. The Listen Green government housing estate bristled with police sirens in the cold gray gloom. The TV catch zone drowned out most sounds. The dishwasher, the doorbell, the neighbors' drunken arguments, and police sirens were a permanent feature of the soundscape of London. But this time, they were so close he could see red and blue lights dancing on corners of his ceiling. There had been a rumor circulating among the residents that an eco-terrorist organization, a small band of London-based radicals, were held up in one of the abandoned properties. They had detonated a pressure cooker packed full of nails and broken glass outside Westfield Shopping Center a few weeks before. The damage had been mainly to the infrastructure, but a few unwary passers-by had been rushed to emergency rooms after being peppered with shards of steel and glass. Within an hour, a team of cleanup robots had left no trace except for a few missing panes of glass in the shopping center front doors and a bus stop with a dented roof. Their graffiti slogans adorned the walls of Edgware Road. "No compromises given in defense of Mother Earth." And ever since the erratic weather patterns became more frequent, so had their activities. Pimlico 891 would have to stay indoors until the protocol was lifted. He positioned himself back into the TV catch zone and settled in to view an interactive crime drama he'd been saving for a special occasion. but he sighed in irritation. He would have to first sit through a mandatory government information message. This installment was entitled Keeping Up with the Lingo, a short infographic cartoon about everyday language and how to avoid using redundant terminology with fines or reconditioning classes for anybody who used defunct words or phrases. After the cartoon had come to a close, the crime drama began. Opening with a beach, a body, a shadowy figure fleeing the scene, a small seaside village, a host of characters to interact with and discover who the perpetrator and the motives were, a crime of passion, greed, or revenge. With such compelling narratives and isolated locations, it was no wonder that crime dramas had the top ratings. Pimlico 891 began the story on a rainy day, outside an ice cream shop, with the scent of the sea and hot caramel waffles floating across the breeze. A voice called out to him in the usual gruff male voice that represented the humble but judicious local police officer.
"Detective," said the voice off screen, "we haven't had a case like this one before. It has upset an otherwise sleepy coastal village. How will you begin to resolve this crime?"
Several options to choose from appeared on the screen. Inquire at the police station, inspect the crime scene, or interview a possible suspect in custody, an out-of-towner who had arrived only a day before. Before Pimlico 891 could choose, the TV buzzed, filling his ears with white noise. He grabbed his head. It pounded like a drum. The interactive options morphed in front of his eyes into a single statement. "No compromise," it said. The voiceover changed to a young female, and the audio reverberated. "Don't fight it," she said. "You'll give yourself an aneurysm. Just go with it. It's for the best." Pimlico 891 attempted to move outside the catch zone, but his limbs did not respond. He was rooted to the sofa. The TV images began to swirl, a rhythmic sound pulsated from the speakers. Unable to fight it any longer, he succumbed to the noise and lost consciousness. A bad dream followed. He left his flat, picked up a backpack sitting on the concourse, and took a bus to Regent Street. The siren began to sound. A sudden electric storm was moving over the river, illuminating the city in bursts of blue light as it went. Pedestrians ran for cover, finding shelter in the bars and the tunnels of the London Underground. He sat in a shop doorway and tried to locate himself. Was it a dream? It felt too real. A police officer saw him.
"What are you doing out?" he said. "Don't you know there's an electrical storm? Find shelter!"
It was the same gruff voice from the crime drama. Pimlico 891 didn't answer. He couldn't. He wanted to ask for help, but the words never left his head. Instead, he took off running with the policeman chasing him. He ran, darting through the back streets until nobody was in view but the rain. He stopped outside the London Trocadero shopping center. Families hunkered down, sheltering from the storm. He went inside, pushing through the crowd, and carefully laid the backpack down. He sat down on a bench next to a group of children. Some graffiti scrawled across the wall caught his attention. "No compromise given," read the words. His heart pounded. The sound of the siren faded as the storm dissipated and the sun revealed itself from behind giant black clouds. As the crowd collected their belongings, Pimlico 891 realized that something was terribly wrong. He reached for the backpack to look inside. There was a pressure cooker, and then a blinding flash. He suddenly came to, a strange metallic taste in his mouth. He was sitting on his sofa, the white noise of the TV drowning out his short, sharp breaths. His clothes were soaked with sweat. The collar of his t-shirt was stretched where he'd been clawing at it. The palms of his hands were crusted with dried blood where his fingernails had cut through the thick skin. He wondered how long he'd been like this. Maybe hours, maybe days. The clandestine chip hissed inside the TV, emitting a heat that made him writhe around like a burning insect under a child's magnifying glass. The TV suddenly flickered, and he was brought back to the crime drama. However, it wasn't a murder in a quaint seaside village, but instead a horrific atrocity. A rogue eco-terrorist had detonated a bomb in a shopping center in central London, killing and maiming crowds of families on a day out. He tried to move out of the catch zone, but he was too weak, so instead, he was forced to look back to the TV, and it engulfed him. He was the detective assigned to solve this terrible case, and this would be his last case. Could he catch the terrorist before the next bomb detonated? Find out after these messages. Or not, because death by overexposure to the clandestine chip was all too common. It was considered to be an enlightened way to leave the outside world. It was a common belief that if you died in front of the 9D TV, your soul entered through the screen, destined to spend eternity traveling through the holographic world.
The Ugly Radio is a production of Ugly Radio Presents and is a part of the Pod Moth Network. Tonight's episode was produced by Andrew Shanks. Tonight's episode was Our Pathetic Age. Featured stories tonight were Requiem for the Body Mod Industry, written and performed by Unknown Citizen, featuring Jordan Michael Whidbey. For the Drama of the Thing, written by Kara Kittrick, performed by Alexandria Stevens, featuring music by Claudio. The 9D TV, written by Anthony Bain, performed by A.V. Eichenbaum, featuring music by Bodie Beats and Claudio. Music guest was Sleepy Eyes of Death with Mega Touch. More music can be found on Apple Music, Spotify, and other streaming services. Title song provided by Unknown Citizen. To support The Ugly Radio, join our Patreon at patreon.com/theuglyradio. You can also contact us at theuglyradio@gmail.com. The Ugly Radio is a proud member of the Pod Moth Network. Pod Moth is a tirelessly curated collection of weird, odd, and macabre podcasts. Give them a listen today. Thank you for listening to Season 3 of The Ugly Radio. We'll be back next week with a post-credit scene and a big announcement, so stay tuned. Until then, take care of one another, and we'll see you in the void.
Oh, hi! If you're looking for another spooky and funny podcast to add to your rotation, check out Anything Bones, now a part of the Pod Moth Network.
Hey Boneheads, I'm Sophie Schwartz.
And I'm Caitlin Hart.
And we are the hosts of Anything Bones, the podcast where we talk about bones and bone-related topics.
Soph, what are bone-related topics?
Thank you for asking, Caitlin. This can be anything from mausoleums to murderers, famous skeletons to cadaver dogs.
Bone churches, mummies, serial killers. You'll hear about them all.
And sometimes we have guests stop by and tell us their favorite bony tales.
Check out Anything Bones on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever your little heart desires.
We release new episodes every Saturday.
Bone voyage!
Hey guys, I'm Shelby, host of Addicted to Crime podcast. Join us for deep, chilling dives into the evil nature of criminals, and let's take a closer look at their early life and background to see how they got to the day of the crime. This podcast was created in hopes you pay closer attention to your surroundings and hopefully stay safe. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts or else on the website www.addictedtocrime.org. Happy listening, thanks for your time, and stay safe.